Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello and welcome to Rock That Relationship. Tracy and I are here today talking about long-term relationships, and our topic today is how to keep that spark alive. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the ideas that we've done, some of the things that maybe we would like to do and haven't done, or maybe some of the things we did and maybe they worked or didn't work, and just kind of get an overall idea about things that you can do to keep the spark alive. So I'm going to start out, Tracy, with just a basic question. You know, in all the relationships that you've been in, have you ever had periods of time in which the kind of the spark kind of settled down a little bit? You know, maybe it peaked again or maybe it just settled down and then just kind of went and died. But any time in which you've had a spark sort of decrease a little bit?
Yeah, I'd say every long-term relationship I've had.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the exes of mine would say that. Yes.
How did you know that the spark was sparkless?
I think it's pretty obvious. I think, you know, it's very hard to keep that spark going. Like, I think you have to be super intentional and you can't let life get in the way, you know? And I also think that there are spark killers, just naturally, a lot of chaos, a lot of life drama, a lot of family drama, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that would naturally kill it, because when you're just trying to like keep the relationship afloat or yourself afloat, you're not really thinking about all the rest of that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's what ends up happening is relationships end up getting put on the back burner. Like, this person's your rock, your support. So all these other things, the chaos of your job or kids or traveling or just being busy or whatever. And then you just sort of like, it's easy to just put that person on the back burner because they're going to be there. They've committed to you. And so it becomes easy to do that. But you're right. Those are intentional or unintentional spark killers.
Yeah. And I feel like it's not that a person, I think, you know, you fall into ungratitude or assuming the person's going to be there, not because you're bad or anything, but just because life is so complicated and you don't know what's coming your way. And it is really hard if one person has several things that are happening, like death in their family or a real needy family or children, where you do feel like those things need to be prioritized, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really hard. I don't know. The older I get, I just feel like relationships, it's a miracle that any of them work for long term, you know?
Right, right. Well, because you think about priorities, right? These ideas of shifting priorities. And, you know, some things are always going to be a priority. Like, I have a child, right? And my child, she will be my main priority for probably her whole life, but at least certainly for now, as she's a minor, right? Like,
right.
I have to make her a priority. I have to get her to school. I have to make sure she's safe and healthy and loved. So she'll always be a priority, but other things are like shifting priorities, right? If things are like really busy, you know, maybe during finals week or a book deadline that I have, and it's like, oh my goodness, I'm just working around the clock and my priority is getting that done. And I shuffle things around, but I try to think about in what situations do I ever put my partner as my number one priority?
You're a way busier person than me. I'm busy with like stupid stuff, but I'm not like you, you know, publishing books and things. And so when do you say like enough is enough, or like I need a break, or I have to prioritize something else? And that's a very hard, I think, balance also, because you do want to have these professional aspirations and goals. And sometimes it can be hard to do both, right?
Right.
Especially with a kid.
There's so many competing priorities. And I mean, the only way that I've ever been able to successfully balance it is by being really, really meticulous with my time and just saying that's the only way that I can kind of carve out like, okay, so I remember when I was working on my dissertation many, many years ago, and I was working full time. I was doing so many things. I was already like starting to do my speaking and all of this stuff. It was pre-child, but I remember I worked every single night. I wrote from 5 to 7 p.m. right when I got home from work, 5 to 7 p.m. And then at 7 p.m., my partner and I, we cooked dinner, we watched our TV shows, we spent time together talking and hanging out. And then on the weekends, 8 to noon on Saturday, 8 to noon on Sunday. And then I'd spend the rest of the time doing fun things. And I remember that that was so useful. Not only did I end up finishing my dissertation in 3 months, and I wrote 419 pages, which is the record, or was at some point, in my department, because I was so disciplined, I also was able to make things multiple priorities. So between 5 and 7, my priority was to write. But between 7 and beyond, my priority was my partner, myself, or whatever else I did. And so for me, I used time management as a way to prioritize and make sure that my partner didn't get just sort of what was left over, right?
Right.
In between.
You're very good at that, at time blocking and time management. I happen to be horrible at that. So a lot of things get neglected.
It's hard. Like right now I'm in a writing group, and I meet on Tuesday nights from 6 to 7. I've been doing it for 4 years now. And it's like, no matter what, everybody knows that is just my time, and that's a priority. But I also know that, you know, like my partner and I now, we do a really good job of saying, okay, which days this week are we hanging out? What times? Like, and we block it off in the calendar as though we're dating. Like, it's not just that you get the leftovers. I want to be very intentional. Our date starts at this time. This is what we're going to do. Even if it's just like, you know,
hiking
or last night we just sat at home and did a puzzle. Like, and so, but just knowing that that time is blocked. And so part of that idea of keeping the spark alive is making sure that you have designated, prioritized time to spend. That's what I think. I think it's really hard to have a spark when you don't have any time with your partner.
Well, there is the alternative of actually being in separate places, or, you know, people who are traveling a lot, or, you know, the person being gone, then, you know, distance makes the heart grow fonder kind of stuff. I mean, I do find that to be true for myself. I do need to get away. I need time to go do other things. I also personally think hanging out with other people, you know, you then get a contrast, right? Which can make you appreciate your partner more. Right?
Yeah, I would
and
agree.
I need to do that stuff. I think the only way to continue to have a spark is if you feel like you're living the life that you want to live. And I do think that's so hard with kids. And I think it's interesting that so many people choose to have kids when it's, and I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat with dogs right now. Dogs are monopolizing my life, you know, and I'm kind of over it. And I'm like, oh, is there any way out of this? Because it's, I'm not even getting sleep, you know, all these things are happening, and it's like, what, how can I make this best, right? And then still spend time with this person. I mean, we both have dogs, so that's, we're both dealing with it with our dogs together. But I mean, people having kids, that's a big deal. And it is a huge relationship killer, I think, in a lot of ways, you know?
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, the thing is too, is that, you know, as a parent, there's so many different versions of kind of time that I see in terms of keeping those relationships and the kind of the spark alive. Is one is my spark with myself, one is my spark with my friends and family and other people outside of my household, one is my spark with my child, one is my spark with my partner, and then one is the spark that we have together, my partner and my child and I. And so I think that when you think about that, like, they all require different amounts of time, different amounts of effort and energy. And so you know, having my child brings a different level of spark and happiness. And so, but what it does is, if you're talking about having any kind of like intimate one-on-one time with your partner, it's a little more difficult to find when you have a child, particularly a young child. I have a teenager, so she just goes to her room and just, you know.
Yeah, but you still have to drive her places, right?
Yeah,
she's not driving yet. I mean, that's
right.
A lot. Right. And the teenager's in the house knowing stuff that little kids don't realize, you know? So for me, that was more difficult when living with kids, knowing that not only do they stay up late, they know what a closed bedroom door might mean or something that made me very uncomfortable, you know? And I'm not, that just always bugged me. So I think that's a huge difficulty in keeping a spark alive, right?
Yeah. Well, that's why you have to have, you know, carve out some alone time. I know that by having a teenager, I can also go out on a date and not have to worry about her staying home, you know,
or hiring of a babysitter,
like worrying about a babysitter, or she's at a sleepover at a friend's house or something. So there's plenty of time in which, you know, you have this alone time. It's far less than if, you know, she didn't live with me.
Right.
But But yeah, I mean, so I think when you're talking about, you know, figuring out, like, almost think about identifying your spark with the different people that are in your life, and what is that spark, and what does it take to keep it alive? I know it kind of sounds silly, but we have sparks even with our friendships too. I know,
Right.
you know, Tracy, you and I ebb and flow based on our schedule. Sometimes we might hike 5 days in a row, and then I don't see you for a month.
Right.
And so how do we keep the spark alive? And you and I make an intentional effort to go hike as
Right.
much as we can, because we know that that's a big connection point for us. So what are the ways in which we create sparks with different people? And like you said, we have to have that wholeness, right, of ourselves in order to have that spark with our partner. That can't
Well, you
be
have to
our
feel
own
good.
spark.
And I think that's not only doing the things you want to do, but actually being healthy and having the energy to do the stuff, you know? Like, that's very hard. I think that's, people are always asking me, how do I have so much energy? And it's weird because I don't look like I have much energy right now. I don't sound like it because I was up several times last night dealing with plumbing issues and dog issues. And like, I can see where I would just be like, oh, I'm just tired. Like, leave me alone or whatever. Like, I think it's got to like maintain, especially as you age, a high level of energy. It's very important, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then also if you need that downtime is also planning that in. I mean, again, I'm a big planner. People say, you know, I can't sit still and relax. Well, if I plan in some relaxing time, maybe, but, you know, kind of going off of whatever works for you. So let's look at some of the strategies. Okay. So we talked a little bit about alone time, having your own alone time, but also having alone time potentially with your partner where there's no kids. Let's talk about technology. Alone time. You're both sitting there, you're watching your favorite Netflix show with your partner next to you, and you're both scrolling through your phones. Some people say that's great because we're in company with each other. We don't have other distractions. We're just sort of chilling. We're not really, really giving a lot of like thought to what's on our phones. We're not really fully engaged on our phones. We're just sort of using it as passive entertainment. That being a connection point. On the flip side is saying alone time is put the technology down, put the other things down, and really just give each other your full attention. Where do you land on that?
Well, I land in a terrible place.
What?
I'm a terrible person. Like, I'm not the person to ask about this because my phone is basically, I'm attached to my phone. And I mean, I do get like all like, oh, why do you keep looking at that phone? And then I'll turn around and do the same thing. But sometimes the phone can actually bring you together because there's so many hilarious things online that you like to look at. And I mean, I do agree that there is some time where you should just be together. I'm not good at that. I can acknowledge that.
You mean just
I
be
agree
together
that it's
without
important.
The phone, like put the phone down at some points.
Yeah. What do? Like put in your calendar, this is no phone time. Is that what you do?
Well, not even like a calendar, but like we try, and everybody that I have been with, you know, since the advent of cell phones, it's always been like dinner time, no phone time. Like unless
that
you're
interesting.
expecting a call or something, it's no phone time for anyone.
I used to do that with my ex-wife and kids because, you know, you're trying to set a good example for kids. But when there aren't kids around, I'm like, toodly-loo, let me look at this. Let me check this. That's interesting. I mean, I think that's why I like to hike so much or be in nature, because that's where I kind of, I mean, I've noticed lately I am using my phone more while hiking, which is a trip hazard, you know, but like it is, there's another, but okay, that's complicated also because when I hike for speed and exercise, not for lollygagging. So it's hard to hike with somebody. Like, if you're going to prioritize time with someone, you kind of have to agree on what you're going to be doing and that you're both okay with that, you know?
Well, and that it's a point of connection, not a point of disconnection for you. Like when you and I hike, we hike at the same speed.
We're talking the whole time.
And so
right?
we engage, right? And so that's important. So if you're thinking, going back to this idea of the technology piece, when you were talking about like dinner time. So one of the things that I've done over dinner for several relationships, not even kidding, since I can even remember, every night at dinner, we do highlights and lowlights. Phones down, we talk about what was the lowlight of the day, something that was either disappointing, didn't go as you expected, whatever. And then a highlight. And you can name as many lowlights or highlights as you want. And we don't do just highlights because part of being authentic with each other and connecting is hearing about the tough stuff. Things that might have seemed relatively insignificant and not worthy of bringing up get brought up in those conversations. And do we do that around the dinner table? So phones are down and we give each other 100% attention. And I've done that, like I said, in several relationships. And it's like, tell me what's going on. So we find a
Do
great
you do
place
that
to.
even without kids?
Yep. Almost every single night without
Do you
fault.
like sit down and eat at the table? That's
Yeah,
part of
every
my
single night.
policy. Yeah, I
Every single
stand up
night we
and
eat at the
eat.
table. And then also I have probably like 10 different boxes of question cards. And the question cards come out almost every night. So after highlights and lowlights, it's question cards like, what are you grateful for today? Or, if you could have dinner with any, celebrity, who would you have dinner with? And it just creates conversation and connection. And so it's a great way to learn little things. But I really love that. And that is no technology. I mean, it is a prop. It's like a, something to use, but I'm not like staring and reading the question and ignoring the response. Like you put it down. But I think that's really, those are
That's very
really
smart.
like strong forms of connection. And I know it's like, oh, like my daughter's like the question cards. And then I get done. I'm still eating and she's done. She's like, I'll read the question cards now. And so she sort of likes it, but it's this way of finding connection. And so I think that that's helpful.
I think that's great. I should institute that as well. Mostly, I just like a friend came over last night and she brought Taco Bell for all of us, which is disgusting, but I wanted to see what, as a vegan, what she was getting there. And then I was done in like literally less than 5 minutes with two burritos. And then I'm done for the night. You know what I mean? So I don't sit around me. We were sitting around talking, but I never have had any kind of structure other than when I lived with children. I just really rebel against structure. So I prefer to talk after times of intimacy or maybe a road trip or something like that.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Well,
I
I'm.
know,
You know,
right?
when I, we, let's, yeah, let's move on to talking and listening as like, as one of the ways of keeping that spark alive. Well, I know you like to talk a lot all the time with your partner because you're an external processor, as am I. And so I think about talking really when things come up, but really these times in which you have a little bit of downtime. So of course, before bed, also, over meals, this is important. And in the car, on
Car road trips.
walks, I take walks with my, I'll take a walk with whoever I've been with. Like I said, in every relationship I've walked or hiked. And so we would talk, and be outside in nature. Just any time I can find, like, I guess it's undistracted ability to communicate. 'Cause sometimes it's like, oh, there's something really big that I want to share, but this isn't the right time because we're rushing to the grocery store or whatever. Like I want some like FaceTimer and like, let's talk about it before I go to bed and tell you about this cool thing that happened at work. I don't want to dilute the surprise by mentioning it to you while we're in the cheese aisle, like, so thinking about that is important.
But also, like, I think for me, the only way to have true intimacy is to actually talk about deep things and actually be inquisitive towards the other person and to have them be inquisitive towards you, because I will get bored if there's no talking, but I don't also need it to be scheduled or regimented per day, right? But I think that's crucial. And I was just found out that someone I was dating or am dating who did not have the same experience with people in their past being inquisitive or caring. And I find that shocking. Like, I want to know everything about whoever I'm dating, everything. And I want to ask, I want to hear about it, and I want them to know about me too,
Well, think about that too. Like, this is a good challenge for like our listeners is, try to ask at least five insightful questions of your partner a day. Not did you take out the trash, but they tell you about some kind of meeting they had at work and you say, huh, that's tricky. How did you feel about that? And ask them, even if it's real time, or ask them about their past history or ask them about whatever it is. But think of five questions and then weave them in throughout the day rather than just sitting down like an interview and weave them in because you'd be surprised as to how many people don't ask questions of each other. I actually have a friend that said that if they hang out with someone and they don't ask them any questions, they stop hanging out with them. So like they're just so self-centered. Just, you want to be asked questions because asking questions isn't just about, trying to learn more about the other person. Asking questions shows intimacy. It shows that you care enough to want to know the answer. And if you can't do that and you don't show that you care, and it's like ping pong, it's like, I'll talk, you talk, I'll talk, you talk. Right. That's not really creating that intimate spark and that connection. It's just creating ping pong.
And it's got to be open-ended questions so that person actually feels like they can talk. And I think it's helpful for them. Now, I don't always think that a person not asking you questions is self-centered. I think a lot of people are very uncomfortable asking other people questions or really delving into their life, you know? And I think there's gender things that go along with that as well as cultural. You know, people just don't feel that they can ask you or be prying. And I'm always like, it's up to me to decide whether I want to answer a question or not, you know?
Right, right. Well, and maybe for folks like that, we start out with just a simple question. How was your day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be getting at anything because you realize how much you don't even ask people that. How was your day? Like something simple, and then build to deeper or whatever you're most comfortable with. It's just the act of asking the question that shows that you care enough to know what they have to say, even if it's something simple.
Mm-hmm.
And then, in some cases, you can get really deep, you know. But I think one of the important things, and you and I have talked about this before on other episodes, is that if you're going to go to those places, right, those particularly those deep places, and you're asking questions or you're expecting this, you know, interchange of, you know, vulnerability, you have to have a non-judgmental, safe space that is emotionally empowering for each person to feel like they can share their true selves. Because if you say something that sounds critical or judgy or anything, or invalidate or discount their experience, they're not going to share with you again. And that right. Not only does that not create connection, it creates a disconnection. And so that can be really hard, where we just like listen with empathy and listen with care versus trying to make some kind of judgment around it. Like, oh, well, that's not really that big of a deal. That happens to me all the time at work or something.
Right.
Because you think you're trying to help, right? You think you'd be like, oh, it's not really that big of a deal. This too
you're trying
pass.
To minimize like what is discomfort for them, and,
exactly.
And thereby you're actually invalidating their entire experience.
Right, right. Yeah. And you think you might be helping, right? And then
right.
They don't want to share with you again. And the next day you say, well, how was your day? And they're like, I was fine.
Right.
And so part of that spark is this idea that you know, being open and supportive of each other, regardless of what you say. You know, there was a show I was watching recently, and they talked about, you know, when you're talking with someone, you know, and you tell them maybe a story or whatever, you say whether or not you want their response to be tough or fluff. Right. Tough is I want your real opinion on this, you know, whether it's advice, it's, you know, be critical, do whatever, say whatever. And fluff is I just need you to kind of listen right now and support me. And you can go into it and just say, I'm going to, you know, what do you want right now? And you say, I want fluff right now.
Right.
Like, it's okay. I just want to be supported and validated. And you can call it whatever you want. The idea is really saying, here's what I need to have this intimate exchange with you right now. And if it goes the other way, it's going to block our intimacy. You look.
Wait, explain that again.
So the idea would be that if I say I want something fluff from you, Tracy, and we're talking, and then you give me tough.
So my best friend, I say I want sweet best friend, not tough love best friend. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. Like
I don't need your
response.
Tough love. Right.
Exactly. Because if we're trying to create an intimate connection or keep that spark with our partner, and we really want a fluff response, so, you know, when I say fluff, it just means nice, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of the rhyming word. But the idea is if I want a fluff response and you give me a tough response, I'm going to be pretty put off, and I'm not,
right.
Maybe I won't want to share with you again. And that creates, like I said, a sense of disconnection. And so you have to keep.
Well, yes, it really shuts people down.
Absolutely.
And I've encountered this and discussed this with a couple of people now who think I'm a pusher of therapy and all that, and that I'm some kind of being a snob about it, or being like I'm, you know, more intellectual than you or better than you or something like that. When I say like a therapeutic response is to actually just listen to that person,
mm-hmm.
validate their feelings, right? And then the other person's like, and I've had this with a partner and with friends, like, oh, I'm just supposed to say what you want me to say. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying hear me, you know,
mm-hmm.
validate my experience, whether there's a solution for it or not that I'm not doing right now. I still need to be heard, and I need to feel, You know, that it really does shut you down if someone's not hearing you. And I was the person who used to shut other people down because I was this, you know, tough guy cop, right? And I also grew up in the school of hard knocks. So then it's like you keep doing that as an adult, and you see that what it actually does to someone when you know, oh, well, it'll be fine. Oh, you know, you'll get over it. Or, yeah, I've had that experience before. I did this. Like, no. You have to say, like, oh, I hear you. That's really hard, or, you know. And then let the person talk about it.
And even if it's not hard, is abandon judgment, right? Like, you know, that's what's interesting. But, you know, one of the things you said really stuck out, right, is this idea of, like, so say I want a fluff response from my partner, and I say, I would like a supportive, validating response. Can you just listen? And then my partner doesn't. They give me some type of a critical response. Not only do I feel that they're giving me the wrong response, but they also disrespected my wish that I verbalized to them to say, this is the response I want, because they felt they needed to have something to say. And so when we think about these ideas of keeping the spark alive, it's more than just like bringing your partner flowers. Like, you can't bring your partner flowers and then discount what they're saying when they tell you something really important and you minimize it or you don't validate it. That completely undermines flowers and chocolates. I mean, that just seems to be surface.
Right. Well, so, okay, that's interesting, because you say this is the response I want. And then some people feel like, oh, you're telling me what to say to you. But you're not telling them the words to say. It's more of the sentiment, the feeling. So they, you know, and I do honestly think that most people don't know that until they've gone through therapy, or they grew up with like somebody who is like informed by therapy.
Well, yeah, I mean, and a part of it is just practicing it too. It's just saying, okay, like, I'm hearing what you're saying. That must be really difficult, right? Where you don't say, you don't, I mean, it's hard to have empathy if you've never been in a situation. You can imagine yourself there, but don't pretend like, you know, like when my mom passed away, I had a lot of people say, yeah, my second great uncle who lives across the world, who I've met twice, he died 5 years ago. I know what you're feeling. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to minimize or assume that that relationship was any less important than mine with my mom, but the way that it's framed is, it kind of is. And so I'm like, but you don't understand. So just don't even try to find some connection with me through the fact that we both had this loss. Just say, I'm really sorry for your loss. I know how close you were to your mom. That must have been absolutely devastating for you. What can I do to help? That's what I need. And so sometimes it's just like with our partners, we have to tell them the kind of response, but not necessarily what the response is. Because I can't imagine that if I wanted like that sort of supportive response, that someone would feel like they were lying to me by telling me, like, that must be really difficult, you know? Like, it's just another way of approaching the conversation.
Right. Yeah, I think it's very hard for people. I don't think that they're trying to be mean, just like when people say if their pet died, and then people are like, fur babies are a family too. Well, yeah, like, why do you need to say that, you know? You don't say, like, children are part of your family too. It's just the way that people, I think that, they're trying to connect. I mean, so you do have to give those people credit as well, even though maybe you don't love what they're saying. I mean, it's very hard. People are just not, they're not that skilled, you know?
Right, right. Well, and in a relationship, in your most intimate romantic relationship, you know, we hold these people, whether right or wrong, to higher standards of knowing me well enough to know how I'm going to respond to something. And so, in some ways, it's really helpful to say, here's how I would like for you to restate that. You know, I've done that with my daughter, you know, and in some ways where I've said, you know, your response was X, Y, Z, or this is how I felt when I got your response. Do you want to try that? Try this conversation again. And we actually replay the conversation. Now, I wouldn't say doing that necessarily with your partner, where it's like you're parenting them. But at the same time, like, part of it is just saying, the kind of response that I would really like in this situation is this. I just want to know that you're here for me. I don't need your ideas. You know, I had a situation where I had a really, really tricky work situation. One of my exes, I had talked to about it for months on end, and she was getting very frustrated because I wasn't taking her advice. And I was in a position where I couldn't really take the advice because there weren't a lot of options. And I felt just like I kept bringing it up because I needed to just be validated. Like, this is a terrible situation, Corey. Like, I feel for you. My heart hurts. What can I do to support you? But instead it was, you need to do this, this, this. And then finally one day she said, well, if you're not going to take my advice, then stop talking to me about it. And I was like, okay, now I know that if I were to do it all over again, I would have been very clear at the beginning as to what I wanted. I mean, it was a complete communication breakdown. She thought she was helping and I was ignoring her. I thought she was trying to be very directive and wasn't listening to me. And we just never talked about the communication pattern. We just ended up just continuing in circles and
Right.
hurting each other with our responses.
Yes, that's difficult.
Oh, look at you modeled it right there. Yes, that's difficult. Look at that. The other thing
I've
too,
gotten very good at that.
The other thing too with talking and listening, you know, we talk about like being able to be vulnerable, but also making sure we talk about the relationship. So like, what do you do in this case? Like, how often do you bring up like the relationship, how it's going? I mean, do you bring it up when something
You
happens or?
mean me? Well, okay, so there's different me's. So in the past, I wouldn't. I didn't really.
Okay.
I wasn't good at that. And I also wasn't good at listening. And I also wasn't good at validating people's feelings and all that. And then I dated several people who were like me. They were terrible at that. They could not validate feelings. They didn't want to discuss anything of substance, you know, as far as the relationship went. And now me in a relationship that's very serious and we're both a little further along on that than the last couple of people I dated. It is important. We do check in a lot. So I think I personally now think, I don't know, daily or weekly check in about it, you know, because you really need to know where the other person is, you know?
Right. Well, and I've read that too, like a scheduled wellness check. I mean, some people get, you know, on Sunday nights or something, they get together and they say, let's just check in. How are things going with our relationship? We've been dealing with some communication issues. How are we doing on this? Or we've been dealing with some issues of follow through or whatever the case may be. You can check in about it. And other people, you know, check in about the relationship when it seems to come up, when something comes up and talks about it. But you know, I've been where you are, where it's like, not kind of maliciously withholding, but just not knowing or being aware that you have to talk about the relationship. Like you have to check in, because by the time, you know, I've had relationships that I'm no longer in, that by the time we talked about them, they were so far gone.
Right.
It was like, wow, it's kind of too late. Like, I really wish we would have talked about this along the way, and maybe we would have been able to prevent whatever ended up, you know, kind of happening.
Well, that's why I always say therapy sooner rather than later, and that it's not just about problems. It's about just, you know, learning how to be with another adult. You know, it is very difficult. I don't think kids are any better being together, but they don't have a choice. Whereas adults have a choice generally, unless they're in some abuse situation, right? And it's like, shouldn't that be the best? Shouldn't you really be talking about it? And, you know, I take a lot of stuff, like I have triggers that are, you know, from past things, including parents. And if I'm not asking that person talking about it, and I kind of annoy people a lot because I'm like, what's wrong? What's the matter? What's this? You know, and it really has nothing to do with me, but that person's around me and their, you know, facial expression is like they're worried about something or they're, you know, something's bugging them. My God, I get all my hackles up about that. Like it has something to do with me. So I am probably do check in more, but I did do that with someone who it drove her crazy. Like me trying to check in or have any kind of like relationship stuff. Cause everything for her was transactional and everything was just get it done. Like that was her whole life. I watched her with her job, which was horribly stressful. And I just left a stressful job, which I don't have any desire to do again because I feel like your life is just like awful, right? And so then you're putting so much energy to the job or whatever. You really don't have that for somebody who then is like, hey, how are things going? Or, hey, I need this. And then that person just snaps. Like, yeah, I just expect you to be there and be in that relationship as is. So I probably was that person before too. It's like we're together, then you just put up with this, and I don't do that anymore at all. I don't want that for myself or the person I'm with, you know. But that takes a lot of therapy. It takes a lot of therapy to get to that place.
It takes a lot of intention too to just say that I want to be sure how I'm showing up. I want to be sure how you're showing up. I want to disentangle what my triggers are from what is really happening here. And I mean, a lot of that is self-reflection, whether it's, you know, formal therapy, journaling. I mean, a lot of people do it in different ways, but the idea of just figuring out how much of the relationship is you and what you're putting on it, projecting, and how much is actually really happening. Let's look at one other thing under this kind of area of talking and listening is the idea of keeping your person as your person. And what I mean by that is it's really easy to, you know, people say, oh, this person's my work spouse, or this person's my best friend, or I talk to my sister every single day and I tell her everything, which is fine. Like, it's great to have other like connections. But we were talking, as we talk with, other folks, we look at things like displaced attachment, where you end up becoming more attached to someone who's not your intimate partner and telling them sort of your day-to-day things for whatever reason, whether that's intentional or not. And then your own partner's like, oh, I didn't know that you're not going to work on Friday. You got this other thing. Or I didn't know that you had a dentist appointment. And you're like, oh yeah, I thought I told you all about, like, I have to go get this filling. And then you're like, oh, I didn't tell my partner that. I just told somebody at work that. And even the little things, it becomes this displaced attachment. Have you ever had a situation where you've had a displaced attachment in one of your romantic relationships?
No, but I have had people who don't like how much I share with others, you know, and that's a real conundrum for me, because I'm like, well, I'm kind of a sharer and I'm kind of very extroverted and have a lot of friends and I kind of talk about everything. And so I've come telling people that up front, because that's who I am and I don't want to end that. So I get your point about needing to talk to the partner and let the partner know stuff, which I do, but I also do share a lot, and not everybody likes that. In fact, some people really don't like it.
Interesting. Well, you're talking about like an idea of multiple attachments, but for different reasons, and you know, the disclosing of private stuff. And for me, I'm thinking more about like a displaced attachment. I've had that happen one time where I had a best friend that I just was told everything to, and that person became my go-to. So when I had good news, I wanted to call them instead of my partner, and I wanted to hang out with them instead of my partner. And it wasn't like anything romantic. It was just the displaced attachment. And so I think that's interesting. I've been very careful not to allow that ever to happen again, because that did get in the way. You know, how can I have a spark with someone when I'm, you know, just moving my attachment to somewhere else? So, okay, let's look at some other things that you can do. Some, you know, we talked
I want to go back to one more thing.
Okay,
about
go back.
When you said private, and that's something I think that couples need to establish up front. What is private information? You know, I mean, I don't, there's certain things I just don't talk about and I wouldn't anyway. But I've had different, the definitions of what's private information, what's not, with people. So that's very important.
Good. Set the expectation. Like, this, whether or not you think it should be private, if this other person says, I don't want you disclosing it, then you honor that.
Yeah, or you have to leave the relationship, because I did date someone who wanted everything to be private, including our relationship, and it wasn't for a gay thing. It was for some other weird reason. And I think that ended up being very unhealthy. It was unhealthy for me. It was gross.
Yeah.
It was not anything I'd ever want to be in again. So
that's
there. Yeah. I think, again, definitions. Private, what's private, what's, you know, you have to really discuss those things. Again, communication.
Right, and being on the same page. I mean, that's the whole thing. We've talked about it in so many episodes. It's just constantly being on the same page. And it doesn't matter what your definition of private is as long as the other person either has the same definition or they're okay with your definition, then you're okay. But the idea of not talking about it at all, it creates havoc. All right, let's look at some other things, like just day-to-day spark, right? Because we've talked about the conditions in which you know, to have spark. You need some time together. You need connection together. You need vulnerability. You need safe spaces, all those things. But what about things like, you know, we've talked about love languages, just gratitude, just a, hey, thanks for taking out the trash today. I try to do that. That is one thing I really try to focus on. Hey, I really appreciate you cooking dinner. And I've tried to do that in my last few relationships. It's just, I really appreciate you taking the time to, you know, go get the mail and, you know, like, thanks for doing that. I didn't even think about it. And now I don't have to go outside and get the mail. But it seems sort of like hokey to be like, thank you, thank you, thank you, like all day long. But at the same time, it makes me feel good too, to say like, thank you, because it makes me really think, wow, this person's doing a lot of really nice stuff. I really appreciate them.
And they appreciate that. And I mean, is it hokey? I mean, people probably think a gratitude practice in general is hokey, but it's proven to actually really change people's mindsets. So I'm sure it can actually really change a relationship, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, gratitude.
I should be better about it in a relationship, thanking and stuff.
Yeah, thinking and just, I appreciate this about you in
Right.
general, not even just like a task that you did, but just, I appreciate that when I tell you important things, you put your phone down and you really listen. So like even these more blanket
Right.
statements, it's really, really nice. I took a happiness class. It was an online like sort of certificate in happiness, and a lot of it was around gratitude, and that actually having gratitude increases our levels of happiness. And I mean, it's
Right.
true. There's a correlation, but it's also just very nice and courteous to do for your partner. When
Agree.
you're thinking
And your
about them.
kid and your friends.
Right. And that gratitude might be like a thank you, as we talked about love languages, like, or words of affirmation, but they could just be like, I'm so, I'm grateful that, you took the trash out and I'll just take the recycling out. It's like you can do things without even spoken word, right? And just
Right.
show gratitude for those kinds of things. So what,
I think those are elementary. They should just be a must in relationships.
absolutely. So as you think about, as our listeners think about five questions you want to be able to ask your partner, just even if it's how was your day, think about maybe five ways that you can show gratitude to your partner today, whatever that might look like, in whatever love language that they want it in, or maybe just a
Right.
nice thank you. Those that can go a long way.
Smart, and sometimes you got to do something in their love language and not just in your own.
Exactly, all the time. I know it's like my love language is acts of service. And so sometimes like, honestly, like scrubbing down the kitchen counters does not like do it for some people.
Right.
It's
Yeah,
like,
they
I
don't,
don't
it,
feel
right.
appreciated when you scrub the counters. I'm like, but then
Some
you don't
people,
have to
it's
scrub.
diamonds and they want to get some diamonds, you know?
Exactly. Whatever it might look like. Okay. So let's look at another thing. I think this one's really fun. Is keep the spark alive is having adventures. So these adventures could be anything from traveling and like getting out of your comfort zone to like maybe even just going to a new restaurant in town or watching a new TV show, just something where you're making a memory, you're doing something out of the ordinary, but you're making that memory with your person, right? And so what are some of the most memorable adventures that you've had in past relationships that really epitomize like the connection that you had with your partner?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't know. Do you have an answer to
I have one.
that?
So many moons ago in a relationship I was in, my partner and I had friends. We had four other friends. We decided to do our own version of the Amazing Race, and we broke up into three teams of two, and we had 5 days to complete all of these challenges. And we made up the challenges by writing like ideas on little slips of paper and putting them in a hat. And then we drew out eight of them, and we said, these are the eight challenges we have 5 days to do. And they were covered over several different states of the United States. We would all end up in Las Vegas at one of the hotels, and we had to get a picture with the hotel desk staff with a timestamp. After we did these challenges, we could go in any direction we wanted. We could do them in any order we wanted, and you got points for every challenge. And if you skipped a challenge, you didn't get points. Anyways, needless to say, the planning of this with my partner was so fun. And the 5 days that we had of doing all these challenges, like we had to get a picture with a wax figure in a museum in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. We had to go offer
My
to
God, how do you
volunteer.
have all this time?
I know. We got to volunteer at a pet shelter up in Colorado. I mean, it was all sorts of things. We had to tour a chocolate factory in
You people
Phoenix.
not work?
We all took a week off of work to do
I
it.
see. Okay.
And so we had an absolute blast. And then you took all these pictures, and at the end we would do like a slideshow or something. I had so much fun doing this trip because not only it wasn't just like a regular trip, it was a total unique adventure. We made this scrapbook and everything, and it to me was one of the highlights of the sparkiest my partner and I had been, because we were just like we were living the life. Like it was so fun and so invigorating. And now we can't take a week off and do those kind of things all the time, but I loved doing that. It was so creative and so unique.
Yeah, you're one of those people who probably likes the escape rooms and stuff,
Oh, I mean,
right?
I like any of those challenges and
Well,
quests and all that.
I can't think of, I mean, I did a lot of things with people, you know, like snowboarding, hiking, things like that. But, you know, I just took my greatest trip of my life in December, which was to the Elfin Sanctuary. So I want to go back this coming December with my partner who was there for just a day. A couple years, 5 years before I was there. So I feel like that's something, it was the best trip of my life. It was volunteering. It was hanging out there. I didn't leave the property for 2 weeks, and I want to do that with her so that we have that together, because that's really it's something I like to do every year of my life if I can manage it. And that it was so impactful to me, and I loved it so much that I do want to share that, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know how much fun you had on that trip and how much you enjoyed it. And then you can find that as a point of connection with your partner by experiencing it together and making new memories.
Right. So I'm not just always talking about it, because I'm talking about the Elephant Nature Park to everybody who is within earshot. And now I want to, you know, go there together and have the full experience together.
Yep, exactly.
I think that's really important, is if you have something that you love so much to share it with somebody else, you know?
Yeah, and then making those memories, right? So that when you're saying remember when, you have at least some of your memories are with your partner. You know, your greatest hits album, you know, you're the star of your greatest hits album.
Right.
And you're going to have other people who are going to sing in your band along the way. But if your partner is not one of the main band player, you know, bandmates, you probably need to look at your album again and say, okay, well, how can I incorporate them into some of the greatest things? So, okay, let's look at this idea of surprises. Okay, so adventures is one. Surprises.
You mean surprising the other person?
Yeah, surprising the other person with something that they would like. Like, I will tell you, I'm not a fan of actual surprise parties. Do not ever have a surprise party for me.
Right.
I don't like them. They've always gone south and all that stuff. But
my ex hated them, too, and I had one of my exes, I should say, and I had one for her, and she was so uncomfortable. She ended up liking it, but she was like, oh, my God.
I don't
was
like
the
it.
Worst. Yeah.
I don't like it because I don't like the fact that everybody that I know and trust is lying to me because they have a secret that they can't tell me about. And then I've had parties that they've gone really, really, really weird. I've told you this before. So I had my 16th birthday party. While it wasn't a surprise, my dad surprised me by hiring a professional clown at my 16th birthday party. I told you this story. It was so traumatic. This clown, I'm like, I'm 16. Why do I have a clown at my party? Was following me around and making fun of me. So everything I did, like if I eat a chip and salsa, the clown would pretend
really
to do that.
Horrifying.
I don't like any of that stuff. So anyways, but I do like general surprises. Like, hey, I picked this up for you because I thought of you, or, you know, something kind of small, or birthday gifts, you know, or holiday gifts.
I think it's just a general gift, like a date gift, whatever. I think you need to do that frequently.
Exactly. I just need to tell my
notes,
partners never hire a clown. But yes,
I can't
notes.
Imagine that someone you would date would hire a clown.
No,
that's very serial killer-ish. Maybe your dad didn't know about clowns and serial killers, you know, that they're one and the same.
It was the 80s. It was like, gosh, there was like 50
was
movies
it?
Out about clowns.
Yeah, I was going to say, we already know clowns are bad.
But anyways, okay, so yeah, so gifts, notes. I love the little note before going out of town that you just write and say, I love you, I'm thinking about you, or wish we were cuddling or whatever. Those are so nice to find. Sometimes like, even my daughter leaves me little notes and I won't find it until I like lift my pillow up or something. And there's a note from her. Those are just sweet. And they're
sweet
not like,
and cute.
And they're not like anybody is like conspiring to, you know, hire a clown. They're not, there's no secret. It's just like a nice gesture.
Right.
You know, or like, hey, I made, you know, tonight I know we had plans and we didn't know what we were going to do, but I made dinner reservations here. Let's do this. Like, it's just it's a gesture, right? It's the gesture.
I love a present. I don't so much like someone to make dinner reservations and being very particular as I am about eating and being vegan and all that. But I do like, I like it when there's a nice present at home or a card or whatever. That's very sweet.
Well, I know. Let me ask you this, because I know that you love to write love poems to the people you're with, and you write those. And so do you ever get love poems from people? And how do you feel if you do?
Sometimes, yes. And I do like it. It can also be an uncomfortable experience as well. I think, you know, it's really like, is that person comfortable doing that? Right? If they can't do something that's outside of their zone, you know?
Right. I mean, you don't want it to be inauthentic. I mean, mine would end up being more like a limerick, but or an awkward haiku. But I'm wondering, for you, it's one of the things that you have given to people in the past, pending that they're comfortable in receiving it. Are you comfortable in receiving a poem? Do you find that as a nice gesture?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I do. That's a complicated, it's just complex.
It is. Well, I mean,
Yeah.
again, it goes back to what is the norm in your relationship and whether that's something that would be appreciated. I just know for you that you like the nice words or the kind words and to give those.
Yeah, I like a lot of things. I like acts of service. I like, gifts that aren't expensive. Like I'm very, frugal, not as cheap as you are, but I'm like more frugal. Now, if someone surprised me with a trip to Bali, would I be upset? No.
Okay.
Or a trip to Thailand or something like that. That'd be great. I don't think that's going to happen in my future, but that would be awesome if it happened, just saying. I think it just really matters if it's something that that person put thought into, right? But it's again, it's just, I think that gifts and little notes and stuff are a gratitude practice just to show that you're thinking of that person, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I would agree. It's gratitude, it's appreciation, it's love, it's all of those things. And again, it goes back to, it depends on what your relationship is based on. You know, some people don't want notes, then don't write a note, right? But
Right.
At the same time, these are just some of the ideas that you know, you can use to kind of spark, keep that spark alive. Okay, I'm going to hit the last one here on
Okay.
our list here.
And you have to listen to the cat purring. I've gotten her addicted to, like, wet food now, and she won't leave me alone if she's,
Oh,
yes,
yeah, you
wanting
can't
it.
really go back from that.
No, you can't.
My
You
kitty's right
cannot.
here, and she's sort of purring. All right, let's talk about intimacy, keeping that
Uh-oh.
intimacy spark alive. We're talking about physical intimacy. What do you do? How do you keep that intimacy spark alive? Do you plan?
You get it on, man.
You...
That's what you do.
I mean, I know there's people who are like, okay, it's Sunday afternoon. It's time for,
I think
intimacy.
That would be a killer for me if it was like something that was scheduled. But I think you just have to, again, it's just like anything. You've got to be open to when the other person is wanting something, you need to hear them out. And when you're wanting something, they need to hear you out. And I mean, I'm not big into talking about that, but it's like, maybe some people need some help in that arena, so they should get that and not be embarrassed about it or ashamed of it. And maybe you just, like, you have to be responsive to the other person's needs and wants, And I do think that that is a need, unless you've agreed that you're going to be in a non-intimate relationship, Like,
right. Yeah. Well, and knowing where your own boundaries are, too, because I know that there's times when it's like, ooh, I don't want to do this. Right now, or I'm feeling really sad about something, or I'm not feeling well or whatever, you just don't want to. So being able to articulate that's also part of intimacy, is drawing your
Right.
boundaries and saying,
Right.
I'm not okay with this right now, but I love you.
Right.
But
Well,
making sure.
I think also I have to say, you have to be careful about, like, I do think it's very important. And I've noticed, like, for me, like with watching shows now on Netflix or this 85, services that we have, Apple and all this, like, I actually had to turn something off last night so that we could have time alone, because we started watching True Detective with Jodie Foster, which is supposed to be so great, but it was just so dark, and I'm just over that. Like, I've hit a wall, I think, with, like, I just either want to watch comedy or something more light. And I think that you have to be aware of that. It's like, oh, if you're wanting to have intimacy or anything like that, you really can't put on these awful shows that are, they're just killers. They're
Mood
mood killers,
killers. Yep,
you
mood
know? And
killers.
it's not even a mood killer for intimacy anymore for me. It's like a mood killer in general,
Yeah,
you know?
I don't watch those. I stopped watching like crime scene shows probably a decade ago. I don't like them. I watch like happy. There's too many horrible things in the world already, and I want to see some happy stuff because there's not as much of it.
I know. I used to be fine with all that, and it didn't affect me at all. And, I used to be a police officer, and I was not affected by anything because I'm like that. But now I'm like, ooh, why am I going to sit around my living room watching some awful thing about people? Like, it just so weird. I don't know. I'm just, yes, I'm finding myself trending towards more uplifting things or more fun things, you know?
Yeah. Well, you're right. It is a mood killer, and it can kill intimacy. But I
And
think
if you're always watching dark stuff or always being sad, and even politics, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
you have
Turn
to turn it off
them
at
off.
some point. You
Yeah.
must pay attention, but you
Exactly. Be
must,
educated, but
right,
turn it
but
off.
have a
Like,
balance, right?
I listen to politics stuff when I'm by myself. I'm either in the car or I'm walking, and I can sort of walk off my frustration, but I'm not going to come home and watch something maybe with my partner. It'll just bring me down. And not that reality shouldn't be real, but at the same time, just knowing a time and place for that.
Right.
So when we think about physical intimacy too, is thinking about just the day-to-day physical touch. There's a great program that I've tried before. It's called Marriage Fitness. And they suggest that you try to physically touch your partner 5 times during the day. And this means like a hug, a kiss, something. And you'd be surprised as to how many times you don't do that. Like you walk past someone in the kitchen. When you walk past them in the kitchen, grab their hand and squeeze it. Just do some little thing. And it actually increases your intimacy because you have, instead of like the intentional touch, it's like the unintentional, right? Where you take advantage of these moments of touch, which, can lead to, again, a more physically affectionate relationship.
100% agree. And did you notice that in this podcast you have mentioned the fives? Five. Let's recap before we end. Five.
Oh.
You say
Five
five things of
questions.
gratitude, five
Five
questions.
questions. Five forms of gratitude and 5 touches a day. So, and actually
Yeah.
five is my spirit, my angel number. So
Nice.
five, five,
Well,
five, actually. So we have 3 fives today. So that's a
wow.
sign from the universe that this is exactly what we should all be doing, is 5 questions, 5 forms of gratitude and 5 touches a day. And
Yeah.
then go out and have an adventure, go do something fun and then turn off the dark.
Yes.
Dark and dreary, and just enjoy each other. Put down the
Yeah.
phones, turn off the Netflix for a little bit, and just enjoy each other.
Agree.
Awesome. Well, what a great way to mic drop.
Yes.
All right. Well, as always, it's been fun chatting about all of this stuff. We got so many cool ideas in here, so many things that we know that we've tried, things that we've done, things that we wish we've done. And so I hope our listeners really get a lot out of today's episode, some real tangible takeaways. So, Tracy, thank you for the conversation. And for everyone out there in our listening world, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.